Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 116 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast exclusively available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. I apologize to you. We have had a bit of a hiatus from the show a couple of weeks as I moved from Maryland to Delaware. So in the process of moving and moving studio equipment, there was a little bit of a pause in what we could do. So I apologize for that. But we are back in full force through the rest of the year and into 2018. So one favor, if I might, before we jump into our guest this week, we could use a few more ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. We have been stuck in the teens here for a little while now, and it really does help us get a larger audience and draw some new fans to the show if we could get those ratings and reviews up a little bit. So to entice people, if you go to Apple Podcasts on your phone or however you can do it and give our show, the Nats GM Show, a 5-star rating and review, I will send you a t-shirt. We have two different styles. You can see it on NatsGM.com, the styles. And once again, like I said, I will give you a t-shirt. I will mail it to you if you give us a 5-star rating and review and you can somehow let me know that you actually did that. So hopefully that's enough enticement to get a few 5-star ratings and reviews. With that, let's dive into our guest this week.
Baron. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The People's Podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.
And now, on the line with me, I have member of the Washington Nationals organization and relief pitcher extraordinaire, I have Gabe Klobosits on the line with me. Gabe, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's going really well. Now, please tell me I got your name right, because I even asked you off air.
Yeah, no, you said it. You said it right.
Oh, thank goodness. I was so stressed out about that. You have no idea. So,
but it's all right.
All right. Well, thank goodness. I'm so glad I got that correct. So, well, first and foremost, thank you for joining the show. I want to also thank your agent, Joshua Kuznick, who is a mutual friend, and your agent for kind of acting as a liaison and putting this together. So thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, first place I always like to start when I interview players is I really like to ask about their draft day experience and kind of how everything started, because I feel like everybody's story is a little different and how you get into the game, you know, for everybody is a little different. I know you were drafted by, I believe, Boston in 2014 in the 25th round, but you decided to remain in college or at least not go professional. I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on how that played out, because I'm not sure I've ever interviewed somebody that spurned pro ball and kind of continued their path in college.
Well, I was a freshman at Galveston Junior College down in Texas. And I was having a pretty good season and, you know, nothing really came about. And then we played Blend one weekend at home, and Robbie Dickey, who's also in the system, was throwing that day. And he was a high recruit in his sophomore year for pro ball. And I came in against him, threw really well. And that's when things the professional level started to, you know, come to mind and actually become a reality for me. And so when I got drafted, it was a shock to me. I was watching UT U of H play in a regional game, and John Atkins called me and said they took me in the 25th round. And I said, wow. I was like, I legit asked him, are you messing with me, or are you for real? He's like, no, go check the internet.
That's so great. That's awesome.
So I sure enough, they did, and that night he came to my house and, you know, told me the initial offer of $50,000 plus school. And I was trying to get him to $100,000, which would have got me out my freshman year, but the best they could give me was $75,000 and 3 years of school at U of H, which well, you know, it wasn't bad, but in my mind, I still had 3 more years of school, and I feel like I could have got more money my sophomore year. Well, I had a good sophomore year, and I committed to Auburn. By the way, the Plains is the best place on earth. Just throwing that out there. And so I committed to Auburn, and the next year the draft came around, and I had a really good sophomore season, and my number was way too high from what teams wanted to pay me. So I was happy to go to Auburn and be there for 2 years. And my whole thought process on the thing was seeing friends that are older than me that I grew up playing with go into pro ball after 3 years of one or two years of college, depending on which route they took. And then being 27, 28, going back to school, trying to finish school, having wife and kids and trying to support a family. It just was eye-opening to me that, you know, to be in the best situation, it's not about, yeah, the money helps in different opportunities, but if you produce, they're not going to overlook you. So just being able to go back for 4 years and be as close as I am to graduating and getting an internship done and playing in the SEC, it overall matured me a lot and helped me better myself for where I am now today. And I wouldn't change my decisions at all. I'm grateful the Nats have given me an opportunity. And it's funny because this year's draft, it was the last day. It was, I believe, the 34th round, and I was calling my roommate from junior year, Ben Bramer, who's also plays for the Nats, calling him freaking out, just like, man, my time's done, like, it's done. And then next thing you know, God has a different plan, and I see my name pop up on Twitter, 36th round, the Nats took me. First person I actually called was my roommate from Auburn my junior year, Ben Bramer, and we were stoked. We get to play with each other again, and we spent all summer with each other, and that's probably my best friend in the baseball world, and it was an awesome moment. And you know, I just thank God for keep giving me the opportunity 4 years in a row to live out a dream. I couldn't ask for more.
That's really, really cool. That's pretty, I mean, and it's nice to hear that everything kind of came full circle in a certain way.
No, yeah, because, I mean, my 2 years, like, I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat this, but my 2 years at junior college, they were good years. And then I go to Auburn, and it's like, how did this kid end up, the eyes of the public, how did this kid end up at Auburn or in the SEC? Because, I mean, I was awful, but you know, it prepared me for adversity that you're going to face on your journey to the big leagues. And it really showed me how to handle adversity. And I was able to handle it really well. And it just bettered me as a person. And, you know, it led to a successful first half season of pro ball.
Well, and that's really interesting you use the word adversity, because you're working as a relief pitcher now, which is basically all about adversity. You're always either coming in to try to save somebody else who's gotten into a bit of a mess, or you're, you know, in the middle innings trying to make sure everything's going well. So I don't know that I've ever interviewed a reliever, so I want to get a little bit of your take on kind of what is it like working as a reliever? How does it differ from a starter, and what that goes into? So maybe I'll just start with the you know, how is it on a daily basis? What is your day like?
So, you know, I like to stroll into the park probably 30, 45 minutes from when we actually have to be there. And I'll eat lunch, and then, you know, I'll sit down, play cards till we have to go out and throw. And once I go out and throw, it's when it all changes for me. I don't really socialize that much until BP. So during stretch, I'm really kind of to myself, just focusing on getting my body loose, my mind right for game time. And then throwing program, it depends on – so I can only base this off my first year. So I would throw one day. So the day I throw, I would only go 90 feet, keep it light, and just work back into 60, 45 feet, spin my slider, throw my splitter, and collar day and do some conditioning. And then after throwing program is when I would kind of, you know, get a little loose again, socialize during BP. But after BP, I'd come in, play cards for about 30 minutes, and then I was kind of to myself again, just getting my mind right for the game. And once the game started, I had a sheet out with their lineup, their averages, and I just sat there and fed off the starter and the guys that threw before me what worked for them. If I saw any speed guys, I'd write down speed. I'd rate them 1 through 3, 1 being he's a base stealer, 3, you know, meaning he's not a good runner.
Right.
And then I would just read swings all game and see if someone has a steep swing, long swing, if I can beat them in, beat them away, beat them up. You know, is he just guessing up there? And I really just use that to my advantage all year, and it really helped me out. But I think the main thing was learning how to take care of my body being a reliever. Throwing one day, then one day off, throwing the next day. I had to learn how to just throw to just get my throwing in and keep my body right. So after the day I throw, that's when I would stretch it out to maybe 120, 150, just put air under it and come back in at 60 and 45 feet, just still spinning splitters and sliders. And then on that next day I was hot, I would do a little flat ground of just fastballs, just light fastballs and at the knees, just, you know, just to get my body back open and back in sync for if I had to throw that day. Because, you know, you're hot that day, but you may not throw because there's still other guys that got to throw before you throw again sometimes. So I would still do the same preparation as if I was going to throw that game, 90 feet, keep it light, spin sliders at 45, throw splitters at 60, and do a little flat ground of maybe 5-10 fastballs, you know, whatever I was feeling that day, just to get my body back in sync, out of the stretch, and be down. And then I would do the same thing, regroup and have a little fun during BP, and then once BP ended, go in, play cards, and 30 minutes, and then I kind of keep to myself, just get my mind right. And I kind of did the same thing every day. Even when I wasn't hot, I would keep a chart just to kind of help the other guys out in the bullpen know what success is. And we kind of all fed off of that. And when one guy would get done, he'd come down, do his arm care, and he would tell us what was working for him. And it was an overall, that's how I would say I prepare, and it really, really helped me a lot.
That's fantastic. And I'm sure that keeps you mentally sharp throughout the game when, you know, it is difficult, you know, to keep your mind in there in the bullpen when, you know, hey, I may not be going in there for a few innings. So
Oh,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's definitely, it's hard to stay focused in the bullpen, but I mean, when we're hitting, you know, you can have a little fun, you know, chit chat and joke around in the bullpen, because you ultimately want to keep it a loose environment in the bullpen and don't keep it so uptight. So when you come in to a pressure situation, you're loose and ready to get the job done. And that's kind of how we kept it. So when we were hitting, we, you know, would talk, joke around a little bit, but nothing too crazy. And then once we went out in the field, it was everyone's locked in watching the game, just to kind of stay focused, but keep it loose down in the bullpen, so no one's stressing out about when they have to go get their job done.
Now I must ask, and I think for those who may not be aware of you yet, now they will be after hearing this, you're a huge guy. I think 6'7", 270 is what you're listed as. So with trying to keep your arm healthy and not over, you know, beat it up too much, do you struggle to keep your mechanics in line and to also find that healthy medium, or whatever word I'm looking for, to, well, I still need to put in the work to try to improve my slider, or I need to work on my fastball command, or what have you. I'm just throwing out terms. But do you find it hard to, well, I don't want to overwork my arm, but I still want to, you know, do the improvement and the work that I need to get in?
Oh yeah. So on days that I know I'm not throwing in the game, I would do my throwing program, my running. But before I did my throwing program and my running, I would go out and I would do tower drills on the mound to keep my myself in line so I'm not throwing it, because I have a tendency to throw across my body. And so I would do towel drills to make sure I'm in line, but I'm also driving off the mound, so I'm using my legs, because I also have a tendency to not use my legs. So I would just do maybe 10, 12 towel drills of that from the windup and stretch, and, you know, make sure I'm gaining momentum down the mound and keeping my, and it's just light, so you still keep your arm going and you keep, make sure everything's still in sync. But I would just do those towel drills every day I'm not hot, and it allowed me to stay in line and keep my body in sync even when I wasn't hot, so I wouldn't get out of sync the next day when I'm throwing. So that's kind of what I did. And also with the flat grounds, it helps too, to keep your body in sync and everything. But I mean, I always got to work on my slider. It's a work in progress right now, but it's getting better. I just got to learn how to just throw it, and don't try to baby it. Just throw it and let it work.
Mm. I'd like to jump ahead a little bit if I could, because in my research, I learned, and I had remembered it, that the Nationals brought you up to Nationals Park, I guess, before the NLDS to pitch to some of their hitters to keep them, I guess, in a groove, or whatever I'm trying to say. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because, first of all, I never knew that they did that kind of thing, but it sounds ingenious now that I read that, and just what you may have picked up, learned, and everything from that.
Oh, yeah, no, it was definitely a dream come true, just to be able to go up there, be with those guys in a locker room setting, and see how their work ethic, see what they do day in, day out, you know, not really getting to talk to them, but, you know, talk to them a little bit, but not too much, just so they could get their work in, and then we get our work in. But it was definitely a great experience, and I enjoyed every minute of it. And, you know, the biggest thing I learned is, yeah, the strike zone does get a lot smaller than it is in the minor leagues, but but the biggest thing is what, you know, Butch Thompson, the head coach at Auburn, always preached to us, was it's not what you throw, it's where you throw it. And that couldn't be more true after throwing against those guys, because yeah, you can make good pitches and it still get hit hard, but more times than not, if you make a hitter's pitch, if you throw a hitter's pitch or make a mistake, it's going to get punished. And that's a big thing I learned. And also what I kind of learned, it's not that we can't play at that level. I think the hardest thing is staying at that level for a long period of time, because there's new guys coming in every year trying to take your job, like even coming to take my job. So it's about the work ethic and how hard are you willing to work to keep that job, because they know we're coming for them and they want to stay there. So I think I learned that the biggest part is not how hard it is, but how long you can stay there. I think that's the hardest part. But I mean, it was a really fun experience, and I learned a lot from it.
Gabe, I've got a bunch of more questions for you. Can we do a little rapid fire? I don't want to impose too much on your time today.
Oh no, yeah, sure. I got nothing going on. I got my workout in already, so I'm free for the day.
Well, let me. First question I have to ask you is, how did you end up with my good buddy Joshua Kuznick as your agent? How did you meet him, and what was that first experience like?
We kind of met through a buddy, and we talked on the phone, and I really like his, you know, his work ethic and him being all about his players, and you know, Josh doesn't take no any days off. I mean, I think I texted him during Thanksgiving and he was kind of doing a little work, and I was like, man, dude, just enjoy Thanksgiving, like take some time off. He was like, no man, there's no days off is his kind of thing. He's always working for us. So that kind of is what I loved, because most guys, I mean, you have some agencies out there that are just about their big guys and then they have these small products on the side. But Josh isn't like that. He works hard for every single one of his clients, and that's what I think separates him from everyone else.
Very cool. Biggest lesson you learned in 2017, or you know, when you got into pro ball?
Biggest one: forget everything you learn in college.
Maybe I won't expound on that question. We'll leave it there. How about best hitter you've ever faced?
Best hitter I've ever faced: Bryce Harper.
Good answer. Good answer. I'm going to take your friend Ben, who you've already mentioned, out of the question because you've mentioned him. But favorite teammate all time?
Favorite teammate all time: Jared Brasher.
Interesting.
He's a funny guy. I played with him in the summer, but he is a funny cat and a good guy. Really good guy.
Favorite road story from that you can share on a relatively PG basis here from this season in pro ball?
I would say going to Williamsport during the Little League World Series. It was really, really fun. You know, we got to see all the little leaguers, and we were going to go catch a game, but it started to rain catching dogs, so we decided just to hang out in the hotel. But I would say that's the best one.
And I don't know how to perfectly word this question, but one piece of advice you would give to the really smart fans out there. Hey, this game's a lot harder than you think. You don't realize this. Just some piece of advice or something that we don't know that maybe we should know for lack of a better way to put it.
Oh, wow. I guess I would have to say it's a game of inches.
Yeah,
I guess that's what I'd say, because you can miss your spot by a millimeter and it could get hit over the fence, or you could, I don't know, it's a game of failure, really. Failure is, you hit or you can fail 3 of 10 times and still be successful.
Yeah, great. That's a really great point and a good reminder. Final question. How about a prediction for New Year's Day, Auburn versus Central Florida?
Oh, Auburn's going on top. You know, we got Gus back. I'm gonna ride the Gus bus till I die. but no, I think I'm gonna say it'll be there. I don't know. We're not that good on the road, so I'm gonna say 28-21, Auburn on top. I know UCF just lost their whole coaching staff, so it might be a bigger game, like 42-21 maybe, but I'm going to say 28-21, Auburn on top.
Yeah, I think this has a chance to be a really good game. I kind of, selfishly, as not a fan of either team, I kind of wish UCF's coaching staff had stayed, because that would have been a heck of a game if both teams were fully loaded.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a good season for Auburn. When you beat two number one teams at home, Georgia, two rivals, Georgia and Alabama, it's a great season. It's a bummer we couldn't be in the college football playoff, but, you know, I love Auburn, and I know everyone loves Auburn football, so I'll be rooting for them.
Well, Gabe, thank you so much for the time today. I also want to thank Josh for putting this together, but thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciated it. I've gotten a great insight into you, and I've just been overwhelmed at kind of your analytical approach to the game and the maturity, kind of the way you speak about it. So thank you so much for joining me. Have a great offseason. Good luck working on the slider, and can't wait to see you in the spring.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
You too. And that was episode 116 with Nationals minor league pitcher Gabe Klobosits. And goodness, I hope I get that name right. What a fantastic guy. Great interview, and really happy that he's a member of the Nationals organization. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does in 2018. And goodness, he put up some numbers in 2017. So credit to the National Scouting and Development people to find a 36th round pick and have a real interesting player on their hands. So thanks to Gabe, thank you to Josh as well for arranging this, and thank you to you for downloading. Bye for now.
The Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. Baron of the Baseball Podcast. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. Yeah. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strike out, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage. Every time I speak facts without turning the page. Let me explain, I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast and his win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness. The truth has been spoken, the people always say it's apparent. You feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strike out, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage. Every time I speak facts without turning the page. Let me explain, I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast and his win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness. The truth has been spoken, the people always say it's apparent. You feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.